The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation,
this is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the gray and rainy heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. We are so glad if you are joining us live, and if you're listening to this in the archives, well, join us live next time.
Yeah, that's right. Welcome. Whenever you're listening to us, in real time or in somewhere in cyberspace.
Yeah, echo time.
Yeah. Today is November the 8th of 2014, and when I say today is kind of gray, I don't necessarily mean that weather-wise, although it is cloudy here
it
in
is
East
cloudy
Central
here.
Illinois. But
there's a mood in the air that's kind of...
Yeah. November has kind of a mood to it anyway, but boy, I'll tell you what, this... just looking around the world at the things that are taking place out there, and you're right, there is a kind of a gray spirit that seems to be hanging over everything, doesn't it?
You know, the irony to that is that as of Wednesday, many in the conservative end of politics were celebrating constantly. I mean, just over and over, I saw story after story after story. People on the right...
Yeah.
We were so glad that the election went our way. We have more of a majority in Congress than the conservatives have had since the Civil War.
That's really saying something.
Yeah.
And there's some really interesting statistics about that I found that supports a theory that we've been talking about for some time, the balkanization of America.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats have been looking at their... And let's see if I can pull this up here. The Democrats have been looking at demographic trends in the United States for the past a couple of decades anyway, but really going all the way back to the mid-60s when immigration reform really took place. And we opened up the limits on the number of people that could come into the United States legally. That has been...
Circumvented.
And the number of people coming into the country has... expanded greatly because of those who are just not bothering with normal procedure. Let's just put it that way. Now, having said that, I think you put it in a post that you, and I forget if you posted this to Facebook, I think, or your website, but you made the comment that if we were parents of children and living mm-hmm. in Central or South Latin America or Mexico, we might very well do the same thing, try to make a better lives, better lives for our children by trying to cross that border.
I think so. I think any parent only wants the best for his or her children. And you may have read that in my book because you just finished reading the Ebola manuscript.
Yes, yes.
I did put it in there.
Okay, it was in the Ebola book. Okay.
Yeah.
Trying to absorb a lot of information here in the last 24 hours to get ready for today.
That explains why your eyes look like they're about to explode.
Yeah, and some of it got into my sinuses too, which is affecting it.
And it's making your beard come out. You've been sporting a goatee now for a long time. A
couple of years.
And you know, we said a couple of days ago, maybe because winter is coming and the polar vortex is mm-hmm. headed our way, that maybe you should let the sides grow out and not have to worry about shaving it anymore. And, you know, like 3 days later, you've got a full beard.
So, with the winter we had last year, the full beard seemed like a good idea again. So I'm going back to the full beard. It's kind of funny because
Sam just left.
Yeah, I said, I don't want to hear about this anymore. But anyway, the Democrats have been looking at the demographic trends in the United States and the fact that ethnic groups that tend to vote Democrat are increasing in the United States.
Sorry, No Shave November. I just saw that there.
Yes, Scott, good call. We like that. No Shave November. And the increasing number of Latinos mm-hmm. in the southwestern United States in particular who tend to vote Democrat, they thought would bode well for Democratic majorities going forward. But that hasn't happened. And what has happened was something that was predicted by Vox Day analyst and author and leads to what, again, we have been talking about for some time, not an original thought to us, but there are those who've been talking about this for, and writing about this for some time, the balkanization of America, breaking it down along tribal lines.
Exactly. I was going to say, please explain that, because not everybody understands right. that phrase. But we are. We're moving toward a tribal society. And Ferguson, Missouri
yeah.
is a perfect example of what's going on.
Yeah.
The friction that started there with a simple law enforcement issue, whether or not is Darren Morgan? No, Darren Wilson.
Wilson
is Darren Morgan.
Yeah.
That's the Millennium Show. Darren Wilson was in the right or the wrong. Everything right. that has happened since is wrong. Looting your neighbor's store.
Right.
You know, harming exactly. people that are your neighbors and are just there to help. That's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And now we see that there's a delegation of family members and friends who say on social media that they are heading to Geneva to complain to the UN about treatment here in America.
Yeah. And when you go back and you look at the actual facts of the case, as much as we can know them from information that's been made publicly available, yeah. it appears that young Michael Brown, a teenager, but a rather large teenager, I mean, football player sized, yeah. I mean, defensive tackle sized, he basically fractured the skull of the police officer, Darren Wilson, while Officer Wilson was in the passenger seat of the Ferguson police car.
That's right.
And
He was going for Wilson's gun.
Was going for Wilson's gun.
The official story is.
Right. And that when Wilson got out of the car with the orbital rim of his eye socket fractured from being punched in the head by Brown, Brown apparently turned and bull rushed him. And there's some evidence to suggest that that is in fact the case. In fact, there was some cell phone video that was taken that caught a conversation taking place between a couple of witnesses, or one witness explaining what he had seen to someone else,
right.
which seems to support the official story that Brown charged the police officer who had asked him to stop or ordered him to stop. And that was when Wilson discharged his firearm and Brown was killed. But as it so often happens in cases that are picked up by social justice warriors, the facts don't really matter. Now, again, we don't pretend to know all the facts.
No, we're just saying
this is what the evidence seems to suggest. And
but it's being twisted. No matter what the truth is,
that's right.
It is being twisted to the advantage of groups that want to use this as a launching point for their vested interests.
Right.
There's what's the name of the group? It's the, it's something. It's not Human Rights Watch. It's the organization that is sponsoring this trip to Geneva because. They're not, you know, you and I couldn't fly to Geneva.
Switzerland, no.
Yeah. Who's got the money for that? I feel especially worried and troubled by the stories that we're seeing coming out of Ferguson because you and I lived in St. Louis.
Not far from, when I lived in the St. Louis area, I lived very close to Ferguson, attended church in Ferguson on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Shopped in Ferguson.
And we still
have. Last time I went through St. Louis, I actually drove through Ferguson because we were contemplating a possible return there
looking for property that was up and coming.
And now we know why the real estate values in Ferguson are lower than in the rest of St. Louis County comparable homes.
U.S. Human Rights Network is the organization that is sponsoring the travel. And on their own website, on Wikipedia, it says, and I love it, the editor puts in, this page has some issues. Supposedly a national network composed of over 200 self-identified grassroots human rights organizations and over 700 individuals working to strengthen what they regard as the protection of human rights in the United States. They seek to, and this is really troubling, to, quote, challenge the pernicious belief that the United States is inherently superior to other countries of the world, and that neither the U.S. government nor the U.S. rights movements have anything to gain from the domestic application of human rights. The domestic application of human rights. What this seems to say to me is we have no rights. We shouldn't expect any rights. They're going to challenge the pernicious belief that we believe that we're inherently superior to the countries of the world, and that neither the U.S. government or the U.S. rights movements have anything to gain from the domestic application of human rights. That there's so much that's troubling within that statement.
Mm-hmm. The group has an official website, in fact, FergusonToGeneva.org. I just posted it in the chat room.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, the chat room, by the way, is open if you're listening live at blogtalkradio.com/PID radio, and then you'll find a link to the this particular episode. I posted a link there so you can check out the website. The contingent that plans to make the trip to Geneva is Michael Brown Sr., sponsored by the U.S. Human Rights Network. Leslie McSpadden, that is Michael Brown's mother, attorney Daryl Parks, UN Shadow Report authors, Justin Hansford and Mina Jagannath. What is the UN Shadow Report?
Oh, that's a good question.
And then activist Kareem Jackson and Charles Wade.
Also known as TEFPO.
Yeah.
Kareem Jackson. What we see in social media is that they claim that they are going to slap these Ferguson pigs with war crimes.
Yeah.
War crimes?
Yeah. The reason we brought this up, and I want to get back to the statistics of the election after this because it's really interesting, and it documents what's happening here, I believe, is that, and we use the term Balkanization of America because the Balkans, B-A-L-K-A-N-S, is a region of the world where there has been fighting going on for centuries.
Exactly.
We're talking Serbia, Montenegro, Kosovo, Croatia.
Well, it used to be Yugoslavia.
Right. That is an area where
Herzegovina.
Yes, an area of the world where various people groups, Serbs, the Croats, the Bosnians, people of different backgrounds, different religious faiths, mm-hmm. have been fighting for years. The Balkans is where World War I started 100 years ago,
and 1914. World War II, some claim it started there as well. And yes, I've read it. I'll have to find exactly why that is, but okay. I've read that both of those started there. And there is some claim that World War III will also begin there.
Hmm. The idea is that the United States, in order to keep this unique experiment in democracy, well, representative republic, actually, the microphone sounded a little bassy in my headphones, and I wondered if I'd put the low cut on, which I did. So anyway,
I like it.
Is to get us fighting one another, I think it's because I cranked up the compression a little bit, is to get us fighting one another by forcing us to identify with our tribal groups, to get us warring against one another so that the elites can more easily control us. If we're busy fighting one another because, we're white Anglo-Saxon Protestant and those people in Ferguson are primarily, African-American or whatever else, something mm-hmm. different than us. If they can get us fighting one another right. by making us angry at one another, by constantly stirring the hornet's nest, by poking it with sticks, we're more easily controlled. And also, because of the civil unrest and uncivil?
I don't know.
Anyway, violent protests, they can more easily justify sending in armored personnel carriers.
Which is
police.
What is there, because
yes,
the Missouri National Guard has actually reserved 100 rooms in St. Louis, and the assets of the National Guard have been put into place. Hmm. Helicopters, personnel carriers. This is not going to be pretty. And the reason for this is that the assumption is that either Monday or Tuesday will be when the official verdict is handed down.
Right. There were some indications in the news that the grand jury and the grand jury is deciding whether or not to indict Officer Wilson. There was some indication that that might come down today, but they've decided to hold that off until early next week.
Right. Well, of course, Tuesday is Veterans Day.
And that would be 11/11.
Yes, or 9/11, depending on how you look at it, because November means ninth month.
That's right, it does. And mm-hmm. December
means
10th month. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who knows the times and the seasons?
Well, good comment in the chat room there that Detroit riots, the same thing. If we fight over black and white, we're not noticing that that the money's been stolen by those who are sitting above the fray in their gated communities with their own security forces and their own schools for their children,
right?
Watching the rest of us tear each other to shreds.
Well, the big question that we always ask is who benefits? And
right.
I can tell you that the spiritual world, our enemies, the fallen, they benefit because they're getting us to fight each other.
Right.
It's like the Star Trek episode that we have referred to so many times.
Yes, yes.
When Khan and Kirk are both being you know, manipulated by this intelligence that just loves to feed off of anger and hatred.
Well, and then there was that episode where this planet was down to only two survivors. They basically killed each other off, except for the two final survivors and Frank Gorshin, the very gifted, impressionist. Yeah, mm-hmm. Impressionist was one of two remaining members of this race, and this was really brilliant on the part of the writer. One of the races on this planet were all half black and half white.
Right.
Split right down the middle, half black, half white. But one race was black on the left side and the other race was black on the right side.
And you had to be black on the correct side in order to be, you know, considered worthy.
Yeah.
And of course they were at each other's throats the whole time and they were not about to stop.
Exactly. And the final episode, the final scene of the show, basically those two men managed to beam themselves back down to this planet that had been destroyed so that they could continue their self-destructive fight to the death.
Yeah.
And it was their entire world had been destroyed, but all that mattered was that one of them wound up winning.
Yeah.
So, but sadly, that is the situation that we kind of find ourselves in right now in the United States. And sadly, you know, there was an episode that's contributing to this. A young white college student in Ferguson, in the St. Louis area, attended a meeting on Thursday night at the St. Mark Family Church in Ferguson. And he was live streaming the event, because there are a number of places where you can go on the web right now to live stream or watch in real time what's going on in Ferguson. And this young man was told to stop streaming, and he either didn't hear or didn't understand. And before he had an opportunity to protest or defend himself, the crowd turned on him and beat him. Mm-hmm. And he ran and managed to run several blocks to a Walgreens on West Florissant Avenue, and was able to get enough help that he could escape the crowd. He's been hospitalized, and now he's on YouTube asking for donations to fund a CAT scan because he got banged around pretty hard.
Oh dear, yeah, those are pricey.
Yeah. So unfortunately, his desire to do right because of the color of his skin resulted in his getting beaten almost senseless.
Right.
And had he not been able to escape, who knows what would have happened.
Now, mind you, the reason we're even bringing this up is to tell you that this is what's going on. This is what the enemy wants us to do. The enemy wants us to look only at skin color, look only at you're different from me, and become socially encapsulated with our own people groups and, you know, tribal, as you say, Derek, in our behavior so that we really just spend all of our time fighting with each other.
Right.
That same thing is going on within the church, within the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
The enemy's got us fighting with each other so much that we're really not doing the work we're called to do, and that is the Great Commission to tell people about the gospel of Jesus Christ. The spiritual world is loving it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
the fallen spiritual world.
Exactly.
The unfallen spiritual world is probably looking at us and going, "What's wrong with you people?"
Yeah, seriously aggrieved. You people were given this wonderful gift of free will, and what are you doing with it?
Yeah.
Doing everything but trying to find a reason to blame other people.
Yeah.
And politically, just to touch on this real quick, we're starting to see the vote beginning to coalesce along racial lines. Until the 1960s,
yeah.
Republicans and Democrats disagreed on policy, and sometimes it were violent disagreements. I remember when we were back in Shelbyville, Indiana, reading some of the local history there, because it was an interesting little town and is an interesting town with an interesting history. There was one story in particular about a political rally about 110 years ago that resulted in the local sheriff being shot dead in the middle of the intersection of Broadway and Harrison, which mm-hmm. is the main intersection in Shelbyville, Indiana, because those political rallies back then, boy, they would, some fellas would get liquored up and they'd take their politics really seriously. But it wasn't really a racial divide. And that is becoming the case. Now, in 2008, Barack Obama was elected president of the United States, and he carried a majority of white voters. It was a slim majority, but he did carry a majority of white voters. In many parts of the country, it was a pretty solid majority. The most recent election, which took place here in the United States just this past Tuesday, The Republican Party really rode a big backlash against the Democratic Party and against the president's policies on a number of issues. But was it the president so much, or is it have we been provoked into this state of voting along tribal lines, just as we have been, you know, the African-American community in the United States for quite some time has been voting on the high side of 85% for the Democrat Party, which is ironic considering the stance of the Democratic Party prior to the Civil War, but that's another story. Anyway, the Republican Party is now, if this election is any indicator, becoming the party of white people. Because the Democrats in many, many races across the country, even in areas that have been traditionally solidly Democrat and majority whites voting for Democrats, swung heavily in favor of the Republican Party.
Well, I think there is something to that. Even African-Americans who are Republican by choice don't really get a whole lot of recognition for their achievements. Mia Love, and what was the gentleman who also won the Republican ticket?
Senator Tim Scott in South Carolina.
They're not getting any kind of kudos for, she's the youngest African-American female to be elected to Congress.
And Tim Scott is the first African-American senator in South Carolina history and the first Republican African-American senator.
Yeah, so why aren't the... If it's about pushing an African-American agenda, why does the party matter?
Yeah, exactly. Why does the party matter?
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Why didn't Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice
exactly
get more recognition from within the African-American community because they were serving a Republican administration?
Yeah. And I will say again, both you and I, we honestly don't care what the skin color
is.
No. Because... honestly, both sides of the fence are have done so many things.
Right.
And if the person in the White House right now had done all the same things and were Bill Clinton or George Bush or any white Democrat or Republican, it wouldn't make a difference because the policies are awful.
Yeah.
They have driven this country into the Balkanization state that was intended, all along.
And you remember back in 06 and 07, we had a midterm election in 2006, and the consultant for the radio station that we were working for in Columbia, Missouri, made the comment to the general manager that I sounded like an NPR liberal
because
I was attacking George Bush.
Exactly, because you weren't towing the party line.
Exactly. Which
it was
sounded,
a conservative radio station that meant that you supported the Republicans. That was the craziest thing.
Well, it was crazy because Michael Savage followed my show, the nationally syndicated talk show host Michael Savage. I was in between Sean Hannity and Michael Savage, and Savage was just as savage on George W. Bush as he had been on Bill Clinton. So, but, you know.
I don't know.
Anyway, exit polling, this is according to Associated Press, showed that whites were less likely to back Democratic candidates than they've been in the past. Across 21 states where Senate races were exit polled, whites broke for the Republican by a significant margin in all but four states, Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, and Oregon. None of those four states has backed a GOP candidate for president in the post-Reagan era, except when New Hampshire went for George W. Bush by one point in 2000. In other words, these are states that are almost always solidly Democrat anyway. And in most cases, I would argue Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, Oregon, being northern states, they're pretty far removed geographically from the actual physical impact of the policies of this administration, especially regarding immigration.
Yeah. Don't expect things to change.
No. Democrats typically rely on a greater turnout among their core voters when the presidential race topped the tickets. But still, Democratic Senate candidates lost ground among white voters by an average of 10 points compared to 2008. And I think that's significant. In the South, Mary Landrieu, who's been in this, she was trying to...
Landrieu, you are not of the body.
Mary Landrieu in Louisiana captured only 18% of the white vote, a sharp decline from the 33% that she got in 2008. Younger whites in 2008 broke for her Republican opponent, 68% to 30%, and they were even more likely to back one of her GOP opponents this time around. She only received 22% of the young white vote. Young white voters were a big reason that Barack Obama won in 2008 and in 2012.
Well, young voters in general, doesn't really matter what their cultural background is. They tend to be pretty liberal. and they just want to change things. If their parents are very conservative, they're going to swing liberal. If the world is very liberal, they'd probably swing conservative.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We just want to stir up things.
So exactly.
Here in our home state of Illinois, Dick Durbin, who has been a very prominent senator, Democrat, and has been in office for, I think, 2 terms. So he's been 12 years, I think. So this would have been his 3rd term. He captured 43% of the white vote, most of them from the Chicago area, which is a real big source of frustration here in downstate Illinois. They're really angry that in the last election, Governor Quinn captured, I think, 4 counties, Cook, Will, Lake, and maybe Champaign.
Well.
And with those 4 counties, he carried the whole state, but he didn't make it this time. So anyway, Durbin only got his 43% of the white vote this time. That was down 18% from support. So the point being that we're beginning to see reflected in actual numbers that we can track now what we've been talking about, where we're starting to see voting now taking place along racial lines among white people.
Mm-hmm.
And that should really concern that should concern African-American activists and Latino activists.
Okay, we've talked enough about politics.
Yep.
Let's go on to other things.
Yes.
We've got almost half the show talking about politics.
Okay.
So I have to steer you toward other stories because there are lots of things to talk about. One of those things is something that many of my friends on Facebook, many of you listening, have already known about, and you are horrified by the toddler's torture and murder that was revealed just this past week. A little boy who was tortured by 2 people and possibly 3, Jillian Tate, age 31, Gary Lee Fellenbaum, and now Fellenbaum's estranged wife, Amber Fellenbaum, have all been arrested and charged with murder of this young, you know, adorable young toddler who was hung by his feet. His head was slammed into the wall over and over. There's a picture that's just terrifying of, I'm showing it to Derek.
Oh, my.
Where his head was bashed into the wall several times.
Oh, my.
So this young boy was treated very, very poorly. And again, the spiritual realm, the fallen ones, are just really loving this sacrifice that took place. And I'm wondering if we're going to find out as time goes on that there's something much deeper to this and even more horrifying to this story.
Yeah.
What was the story that we just saw last week? You mentioned it earlier when we were talking about this, and it was the execution-style death of—
Yeah, there was a, down in Alabama, a town called there called Bay Minette, a 19-year-old girl named Brittany Wood disappeared on May 30th of 2012. May 30th, isn't that the night before Valpurgis knocked, or am I thinking of the wrong date?
Well, I think it may be, actually. Let me look it up.
Yeah. Anyway.
April 30th.
April 30th. So wrong date. But anyway, but anyway, May 30th, 2012, Brittany Wood disappeared. She was with her uncle, a fellow named Donnie Holland. Holland was under investigation for sex crimes. Specifically, he was accused of being the leader of an incestuous ring that shared children for group sex. Eight of Brittany Wood's adult relatives and 3 family friends have been charged with dozens of felonies in 2 counties in Alabama as the alleged members of this ring. Holland was the leader, prosecutors say, of what's been described as the largest sex ring ever uncovered in Alabama. Wood was a victim and was likely a key witness in the prosecutor's case. She's presumed dead, but she, to this date, 16 months later, has not been found. But Donnie Holland himself, the night before he was supposed to testify, was found dead of a bullet wound in what was ruled a suicide, even though the gunshot came from behind his ear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is why I said execution style.
Mm-hmm.
That's typical. You know, they'll generally take a .22 or something like that.
Yeah.
And we'll put it to the back of the ear and just pull the trigger.
Yeah, the night of the disappearance, mobile phone records and witness accounts indicate that Wood left West Mobile, Alabama with Holland and crossed Mobile Bay into Baldwin County, where Holland was found 2 days later inside his SUV by his wife and one of her friends. He'd been shot in the rear of his head behind an ear, which authorities considered an odd spot for a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That is a typically a spot. And they'll use a .22 because the caliber of the bullet isn't large enough to
Right. Goes around and around in your head.
It doesn't punch out the other side of the skull. It just kind of goes through your brain and scrambles it up.
So, Wood's mobile phone battery was in the vehicle with Holland, but there was no sign of Brittany herself. Her gun, which she carried with her, was in the car as well, and was the only gun in the car. Holland never regained consciousness and died several days later. So the speculation is that Holland, if that wound was not self-inflicted, was shot to shut him up.
Yeah.
And if he was the leader of this ring and somebody wanted him shut up, was it other members of the ring, accused members, or was this ring perhaps linked to people in positions of authority or responsibility? Don't know. That is sheer speculation on my part.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's true.
I don't know. But this is really disturbing and just indicative of why we said at the beginning of the program that there just seems to be this gray cloud hanging over things. I mean, we see the things happening in Iraq and the Middle East with ISIS in Syria. And a story that I found today, which kind of opened my eyes a little bit. For years I've been hearing tales of Christian persecution. And I shouldn't say tales, but accounts of Christian mm-hmm. persecution. Tales makes it sound like it's a made-up story, and that's not what say at all. But I know here in the United States, we tend to complain about things like department store chains changing their Merry Christmas display to a Happy Holidays display, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. That's not really persecution. I mean, maybe that's indicative of a spirit, but it's not really persecution. But the story that I saw today was that, and this was reported at The Independent in the UK. The UK is not not really a Christian nation anymore. Not as openly Christian as areas within the United States. I mean, there are parts of the United States where people are very openly, you know, Christian, and there's no shame to it. But the story was titled "Christians, the World's Most Persecuted People," and this was according to the former chief rabbi in the UK, whose name I didn't highlight in the article, Lord, and the name is not coming to mind here. Because I saved it to Pocket, and I guess his name was in the caption to the accompanying photos, and that which didn't get saved. But the point is that 80% of the accounts of religious persecution around the world, according to the Center for the Study of Global Christianity, the International Society for Human Rights, which is a secular group,
mm-hmm.
With members in 38 nations around the world, reports that 80% of all acts of religious discrimination in the world today are directed at Christians. And in many areas of the world, violently so. This has been brought to light really by ISIS, maybe brought into sharp focus here recently when the media finally sat up and began to take notice of what ISIS was doing in Syria and Iraq. But you know, there are other places around the world, like in India, where machete-wielding Hindu radicals took out as many as 500 Christians, you know, just hacked them to death.
Oh, I know. The name you were looking for is former Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks.
Yes, Lord Sacks. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. So this was kind of an eye-opener for me, because I confess I've always kind of attributed accounts of Christian persecution around the world. You see, and yes, I acknowledge that in other parts of the world that Christians were being persecuted, but I didn't realize that the statistics really backed it up. I assumed that in Islamic nations or in Hindu nations, Buddhist nations, that anyone that wasn't part of the dominant religion in that culture was being persecuted against. But we can see, and you know, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, because Jesus Christ warned us that if the world hated him first, it certainly would hate his followers.
That is true. And I do want to remind you, all of our listeners, that even though we still consider ourselves a Christian nation over here, we are very quickly moving away from that. Just recently in Atlanta, Georgia, members of, I don't know if they're radicalized, but they were Muslims indeed, who were out celebrating Ashura by beating each other bloody right there in Atlanta, Georgia. And someone at Facebook, and I think this was very apt, made the comment that it's like when Elijah was on Mount Carmel and the priests of Baal were cutting themselves trying to get Baal's attention.
Celebrating what now?
Ashura.
Ashura?
Mm-hmm. Last Monday was the Islamic bloody holiday Ashura. This was dated November 8th, 2014. Millions of Muslims took part in the horrible, terrible ceremony to remember the death of Muhammad's grandson, Hussein.
Oh, right. I've seen stories about that in other parts of the world. I didn't know that was taking place here in the United States.
Atlanta, Georgia.
They basically whipped themselves with
into a frenzy.
Chains and knives and...
Yep.
Okay, yeah, here's a story from Gateway Pundit, which has been a real good source of information on the ground about Ferguson.
This one's from Conservative Post.
Yeah, but the Gateway Pundit story was about this taking place in St. Louis.
Oh, dear.
You know, are we actually involved in a religious war that we in the West don't know about?
Well, I believe we are. And you and I have talked about that for 10 years. But most people in the mainstream media, especially, they simply don't see it. They are looking at surface problems that are really rooted in this spiritual warfare.
Hmm. Well, I see in Myanmar, by the way, the government in Myanmar has decided on their own policy for addressing the Muslim issue inside their borders. They've given the Rohingya people, estimated 1 million of them living on the west coast of Myanmar, the former Burma, basically, they've got a choice. Prove that your family has lived in Myanmar for more than 60 years, and then you can stay, but you'll have to accept second-class status, or get out.
Mm.
Just leave. Get out. And so many of them are taking to the ocean and trying to make their way to Malaysia, which is the one of the largest Muslim nations on the planet. But in the last 3 weeks, over 14,000 Rohingya people have sailed from Malaysia or from Myanmar to Thailand. On their way to trying to get to Malaysia. That's how they're dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, along the lines of spiritual warfare, before we forget to mention this, because I think this story is an important one, it comes out of Wales in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
And the so-called Hannibal Lecter cannibal mm-hmm. killed by police taser as he was eating a woman's face. This is a man who had just been released from prison.
Mm-hmm.
He had served just 5 years, I think, of a 10-year sentence, but he had been released. He was living in what had once been a nice hotel. It was now just sort of a halfway house for criminals who were halfway to their freedom. He met a woman, did mm-hmm. some cocaine, either before or after meeting her, took her back to his room. The proprietor of the building knocked on his door, said no women allowed. There was no response, mm-hmm. so the proprietor managed to get, I assume, keyed his way in, and found this man eating the woman's face.
Yeah, they said that, I don't want to get too graphic. I mean, if you want to read
the
story.
No, you can picture it.
You can Google this and find out, but it was pretty gruesome, and police were summoned. They tased the guy, and the news report is rather curious. It just says he became unresponsive.
Yeah.
Which may mean they just basically had to subdue him with extreme prejudice.
Exactly. Well, and we've seen that when some of these criminals are tased, that the drugs that are in their systems keep them from falling down. They maintain their stance and they continue aggressive behavior until they have been tased so much, sometimes they die.
Yeah. And cocaine doesn't normally result in a desire to consume human flesh. I think there was something more going on with this fellow.
I think so too. I do.
Yeah. Yep. By the way, I just looked up the location of that case out in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And that's not far from Lancaster, which is Amish country, which tracks with what Russ Dizdar. But now, I don't know specifically if that is an Amish area there, but he has reported in over the past years that we've known Russ that the areas where you found concentrations of so-called Pennsylvania Dutch was an area where former, word in air quotes, former Nazis from World War II were settled after the war when they were brought in through Operation Paperclip. So there seems to be...
Didn't you discuss that with Russ, but I think also with... did you talk with Peter Lavenda about the Paperclip project in Pennsylvania?
I don't recall. I'd have to go back. Frankly, I'd have to go back and listen. I know that we discussed it with Russ, and that there seemed to be an unusually high number of incidents that were taking place in those areas. Because there was a rash of incidents in around Lititz.
Yes.
And where is Lititz relative to this location? I'm going to have to look that up as well.
Well, while you are looking that up, I'll bring about a story that was reported on yesterday, and it's just another part of the spiritual warfare that we see going on in Iowa. Small town in Iowa, Villisca, in fact, a house that has been deemed the axe murder house because, see how many people, in 1912, several brutal murders took place there. A young man who went there to stay overnight with a family-run paranormal investigation team killed himself. He stabbed himself to death in the axe murder house.
So perhaps something that was...
Well, if they were there to investigate paranormal activity, possibly.
Yeah. Okay, I said Lititz. It's Lititz, Pennsylvania, where there were some incidents that took place. And I'd have to go back into our archives to find out, remember exactly what they were that we had talked about. But this West Colne Township in Pennsylvania is about 30 miles southeast.
Well, I remember one of the stories that came out about that time was a young woman who had a boyfriend who she wanted to get away from her family, and so she hired him to kill them.
Hmm.
And then, of course, recently we've had the story of the two girls who were at the roadside stand in front of their Amish farmhouse, and they were kidnapped, and praise God, they are okay. They were found, and the people who took them and who had planned to do horrible things to them, because they have confessed and given details of what their plans were, those two people have now been arrested.
Mm.
And whether or not they are part of something deeper, you know, oftentimes people don't just on their own decide, I think I'll just go out and grab some kids and you know, do evil. It's usually part of a small group or even a large group, sometimes of coven or another group that is into supernatural communications.
Mm-hmm. I read a science fiction story a while back, and I bring this up because I've got a story here that caught my eye earlier in the week about the discovery of parallel universes. And in this fictional story written by Larry Niven, my favorite science fiction author, the ability to travel between alternate timelines was perfected. So people, you know, researchers were able to, you know, like in the science fiction series Sliders, were able to slide across timelines, you know, to research what was going on in alternate universes. The implication, or you know, the result of this, the consequences, word I was looking for, the consequences of this was that people realizing that there were multiple versions of themselves scattered across timelines, you know, every decision you make, multiple branches spread out. You know, I choose to say implication instead of consequence. Well, in an alternate universe, I said consequence. In another one, I said consequences. You know, it's anyway, realizing that there were innumerable copies of themselves spread across multiple timelines, they decided, well, what difference does it make if I decide to just take this ice pick and go through the back row of the theater and just stab people through the chairs? It doesn't really matter because in an alternate timeline, I'm not doing it. So why not, you know? And so that was what the story was about, was how the police had to try to deal with that situation. How do you deal with a world in which people realize that their actions really don't matter?
Well, let me get to a meme along the same line that has been percolating throughout the mainstream media. Huffington Post, other mainstream outlets have been publishing stories on this. And that is that you and I and all of our listeners, every one of us, is living in an ancestor simulation. If indeed we are living in a computer program, what difference does it make?
Yes, yes. And that's where...
And of course, I don't believe that. But I mean, if you fall into that trap of believing, you know, I'm just bits and bytes, what does it matter?
This
ones
is
and
all
zeros?
Hologram.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're living...
I'll do whatever I'm going to do.
Now, Chuck Missler does a teaching in which he points out that when you get down to the atomic level, that the ratio of solid matter in the nucleus of the atom and the electrons.
Down to the subatomic level,
right. That the ratio of solid matter in an atom you know, the nucleus and the electrons, mm-hmm. Versus the empty space between the nucleus and the atoms that are orbiting it is like 1 to 10 to the 15th power, which he said is like, I forget the exact number of years, but it's like 1 second versus like 30,000 years or something like that. It's ridiculous.
Almost all space.
Exactly.
And that's when, if you start thinking about that, then you may be tempted to go down some really crazy roads.
Exactly.
New age roads, old age roads, but they're lying roads.
Yes, exactly. And you know, Missler says...
And Missler is wonderful because he's trying to explain what science is teaching us and discovering, yes. and saying, you know what? That just is proof that God is holding everything together.
Exactly. God is holding it all together. The fact that, you know, when you touch a solid surface and you feel a solid surface, the fact that it's really the electrical charges of the atoms in the tabletop versus the atoms and molecules in my fingers, mm-hmm. You know, again, that way lies madness if you start thinking too
hard
about it.
And the next time I go to the doctor's office and he puts me on that scale and says, you need to lose 20 pounds, I'm going to say, but I'm mostly air.
It's just all a simulation.
Exactly.
I've been dieting. So
need to have a sound drop that we can throw in.
There are those, right, who believe, and that way also is the way that the people who believe in the law of attraction think. That if the relationship between us and our surroundings is just one of a simulation, if we're just all living in what amounts to a holographic simulation, then we should be able to exert our own will over things around us and make things happen. And because it doesn't, because that's not the way it is, you know, again, Chuck Missler is teaching that this is foolishness. This is folly.
Yes, but the our own federal government, the men who stare at goats, would disagree with you.
Well, that's true, and that's one of the things that kind of makes me nuts is that if you're a Christian and you still believe that this is a Christian nation, you really need to step back and look where our government, especially since World War II, has been spending its research dollars. Yeah, just look up the Church Committee report on MK Ultra and. The men who stare at goats. It sounds goofy, but the United States, like Russia, was spending money trying to weaponize the occult. But anyway, researchers now are beginning to challenge the foundations of quantum science. They've got a new theory based on the existence of and interactions between parallel universes, and they say this explains some of the questions raised by the mysterious dark matter that has never been discovered.
Yeah.
And some of the weird, bizarre things about quantum mechanics. Again, look for it to be used by the New Age movement to justify the law of attraction and mind over matter. That sort of occultic stuff.
Well, I'm trying to get the.
that is the clue, Scott, in the chat room. The trick is there is no spoon.
I'm trying to get the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies, the IEEET, website to pull up, and you know it's been slow in loading for the last several days. They need to. They need to do something.
Well, while that's loading, I'll bring up.
Well, the reason I wanted to bring it up is because there's an article that was published there today. That says that death should be optional.
Yeah, and that's a belief that's part of the transhumanist movement and the posthuman movement for quite some time. A fellow in the late 1960s, Alan Harrington, in a book called The Immortalists, wrote, "Death is an inconvenience that should no longer be tolerated," or something mm-hmm. to that effect. And that is he's a guy that's quoted pretty regularly by Jason Silva, who's the filmmaker. Who posts those, short YouTube videos praising Kurzweil?
Yeah,
hail Kurzweil!
We love him.
That should be.
I know. I was watching another one yesterday, and you go, Jason Silva, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. You can tell. And if you listen to A View from the Bunker, you'll hear Jason Silva in the opening montage. To be as gods, you know. That's he's very enthusiastic and. I will say this for him. I wish all Christians were as enthused about our Lord Jesus Christ as Jason Silva is about the technological singularity.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, there's a movie out now that, it's that new one that we were talking about on Facebook today, the what about with Matthew McConaughey. Starts with an I.
Oh, no, it's a new series on HBO. It's been out for a year.
I thought it was a movie.
No, no, it's a series called the. It's called True Detective.
No, that's not the one I'm talking about.
Oh, different Matthew McConaughey. Oh, you fooled me again,
it's
boy.
It's the same one. It's just a movie. Let me see if I can find
McConaughey. By the way, has been outed as a Christian.
That would be pretty awesome. In fact, he played the Billy Graham kind of character in
Contact.
Contact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. The name of the movie is, and people in the chat room are shouting the name of the movie to me. Interstellar.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. And I have read, I've not seen the movie, but I have read spoilers of how it ends. And it just brings Arthur C. Clarke to mind and some other memes that we've seen in media about the moon. I won't say more than that because I don't want to spoil the movie for you. But that may be one of those movies that we have to put on our watch list to make sure that we see. And back to True Detective, who was it that recommended we watch that? Because I did go ahead and purchase the first episode. We don't have cable, so we don't have HBO, but we do have Amazon, which now has a wonderful contract with HBO. So you can go in and go ahead and pay for it's a modest fee to get an episode. So we're going to watch that probably tomorrow.
That was Dion Lowe in
Yeah, so thank you for
South
recommending
Africa.
That. Yeah. Thanks for doing that.
But I've been hearing people talk about it for a while. You talk about it in the same way that we talked about the television series Millennium. Just more going on than what's on the surface, some occultic things.
Well, it's very much like
evil.
We have been discussing for the least the last 20 or 30 minutes, and that is that there is a dark spiritual undertone that is slowly rising to the surface here in the United States and becoming mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Paganism has taken over.
Yes, yes. It is not moving into a post. Well, it's not moving into a new age of
reason.
Yeah. In fact, I kind of had to laugh. We were watching Star Trek: The Next Generation the other night, and they were talking, to some characters that they'd found some corpsicles that they'd found. anyway, and some people had themselves frozen, like many in the transhumanist movement now. You know, I'll freeze myself until such time as they can cure the disease that's about to kill me.
Yeah.
And they brought them back to life, cured their diseases, and then they were trying to catch him up on 400 years of history.
And of course, there was much comedy.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Captain Picard saying, we have cured want and disease and, we live on reason. And we're like, yeah, right. Like humans will ever get to that point.
Exactly. No, that ain't happening, folks. That ain't happening.
No, I mean, look over the last 6,000 years or so of human history. And the only thing we've gotten better and more efficient at is ways of exterminating one another, which is sad, but true.
Yeah.
What else? What else did I have?
By the way, I put in that we would be going 90 minutes, and those of you who are looking at thinking, oh, it's going to be a 90-minute show. No, we only did that. So if we go a minute or two over, they're not going to
cut us off. Yeah, because we do tend to,
We do. But we try to keep these at just about an hour, so you don't have to listen forever on your MP3 player thinking, when will they ever shut up?
Let's see. A couple of other things going on. Interesting that last week the World Health Organization reported that there were 13,703 cases of Ebola and 4,920 deaths. This week, the new numbers report 13,042 reported cases and 4,818 reported deaths.
Mm.
Now, I'm not a statistician, but it seems to me that the numbers reported this week are smaller than the numbers reported last week, which means either somebody's goofed, the numbers have been jiggered, or there are about 102 Ebola zombies wandering around somewhere.
Well, that's always possible. It's hard to say what's going on. I'm going to be talking about Ebola tomorrow afternoon as part of the Quest for Truth conference, which is just a virtual conference. And sadly, if you have not already registered, they've registered as many as they can do. Apparently, they have a limit to the number of their cool crowd, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the good news is that all of the presentations will be available for on-demand viewing forever, as long as the Lord tarries and we still have access to an internet. You can continue to watch those and bring your friends over and get popcorn and just have a good time watching those as you please. And next weekend, you and I are doing part of the the World Turned Upside Down Conference, which is actually taking place in Dublin, Ohio. But we're not traveling there. We're going to be space age and beam in with our massive heads on the screen.
We should just, you know, look down on them on the big screen and say, I bet 20 Quetlus on Gons.
I'm writing that down. You know what? We're actually not presenting. I think we're just part of a talk on transhumanism, sort of a roundtable. Mm-hmm. But we are also doing a New York conference.
Right. The Wayne County.
Again, we're not traveling there.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be close to the Wayne County, is it Christian Church?
It's the Christian Church of East Williamson. It's East Williamson, New York. It's the Wayne County Prophecy Conference. David Hamblin, who is at the Pikes Peak Prophecy Summit, will be there. And we are very thankful that David is a techie and an engineer because he's helping coordinate the video feed from the bunker.
He is. Our big heads from the bunker.
Yeah.
We really wanted to go there, but this is turning out to be a pretty busy month for us. We just got back from Crane, Missouri, where we had a wonderful time visiting with the Horn family. And they have the same towels we do.
Yes, yes.
Didn't steal your towels, saying that, but we just happen to have the same towels you do. So what sort of cosmic, you know, connection is there to that?
It's we like to save money and we buy at the cheapest store.
Oh, no. I did that. Hey.
No, actually, those are nice towels.
I was going to say, those towels are expensive towels. They may have come from Walmart, but they were not cheap towels.
No, they aren't. So that was really wonderful, and we'll keep you posted when the interview that Sharon did with Gary Stearman comes out. Gary interviewed Sharon about her forthcoming book, Ebola and the Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse, for the forthcoming Skywatch TV. Tom Horn has built a television studio there in Crane.
It's really nice too.
Yeah, and Joe Artis was the behind the camera, their son, and so we get a wonderful time. Joe took us on a tour of the property there, and the Horns' two daughters, a wonderful family. We had a great time with the kids. In fact, I think we had more fun talking with them than we did doing anything else.
We got to pet the little ponies.
Yes, yes. Nita Horn raises miniature ponies, and she's got one that's a dwarf miniature.
We should post a picture of that because Joe took a picture of you and me standing with that little pony.
Yeah, yeah, and
it's not a whole lot bigger than Sam is. I mean, Sam, well, maybe twice Sam's size, but it's about the size of Gretel.
Yeah,
our lab mix from St. Louis.
And she was not a big lab.
She was about 40, 45 pounds.
Right, and this pony, a little more stout than that, but did not come up to my knee. It was not even knee high.
Right. Little legs like Sam. I think it's part dachshund.
Yeah, probably was, because the whole time we were there, all he wanted to do was eat, which would be like Sam.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, that was wonderful. We'll keep you posted on the date of the release of the interview, and we're praying that Skywatch TV takes off. Tom's got a great vision for the program and what he hopes to use it for. And we'll tell you more about that.
I don't know that we're really free to speak for him on that. So we'll let him do that.
Well, I want to talk about one more thing. And I brought this up on the most recent View from the Bunker that I posted on Wednesday night, which was the interview with Russ Dizdar from Pikes Peak. Mm-hmm. And that was an incident that took place last weekend. And I was really slow to catch on to the significance of this until after it actually happened. And I saw the young lady's picture on People magazine at the drugstore, and wondered, okay, what's this all about? I'm talking about Brittany Maynard, who is the 29-year-old woman from she moved to Oregon this year. She was diagnosed at the beginning of the year with terminal brain cancer, and she made a public decision and declaration that she was going to commit suicide on November 1st, and apparently she followed through with that promise because last weekend she did take the medications, the drugs, the poisons, really, that were prescribed for her by the doctor in Oregon, where they've had an assisted suicide law on the books since 1994.
Exactly. So this was nothing new. It was just she was a beautiful, photogenic young woman who was the perfect poster girl for the mission to have every state, every country worldwide accept euthanasia and ending your own life.
Yeah, suicide.
But more than that, the push is toward euthanasia. Well, I firmly believe that. Mm-hmm. This story that I mentioned earlier about the singularity singularitarians, as they call themselves, wishing that everybody should have the right to choose death or mm-hmm. not. Well, that's part of that. It may seem like it's not because they want to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can choose to die, in their paradigm, it can be today or never.
Mm-hmm. And this young lady, it really was in a tough spot. And I don't have any frame of reference to speak to her condition or her situation.
But in a way you do. I mean, your dad went through.
Well, something very similar.
Something very similar. He knew he was probably dying.
Right.
And he knew his time was growing short. And he also knew that he was losing more and more brain tissue every day. And therefore he was going to have problems breathing eventually. It wasn't going to be fun.
Right, right.
He could have chosen to end his life, but he didn't.
No, that's true. He didn't. He was on morphine at the end. Basically, my father died from a very strange disease. It's so rare that it only affects people who have severely compromised immune systems, like people with full-blown AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Dad didn't have AIDS. And it only affects 3% of people with full-blown AIDS.
Yeah.
There's a virus that...
it's the JC virus, yeah, the John Cunningham virus.
Right. Something like 80% of American adults have been exposed to it. But in most of us, it's dormant. It's harmless, basically. It reproduces, but it doesn't do anything. But in people whose immune systems have been compromised, it can take up residence at the back of the brain, cause a lesion that eventually is fatal. So rare that very little research has been done on it. Virtually no research into how to cure people who've been affected with it. And by the time they figured out that this is what was killing Dad, it was within a couple of days of his passing anyway. But I had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with him at the end, and he was okay with the situation. He said, "Look, I'm okay either way. If I get better, that's fine. If I don't, I'm ready to go." He knew Jesus Christ, and I know where he is now. And I thought it was appropriate for his service. We picked the verses from Job where he said, I know that my Redeemer lives. And I will see him, you know,
Yet in my flesh shall I see God.
Yet in my flesh shall I see him, yes. And it seemed very appropriate for Dad, who'd had, you know, knee replacement. He'd had a detached retina that had to be fixed. He had rheumatoid arthritis. And so he had a lot of things going on.
He was the bionic man.
But the case of Brittany Maynard, as Sharon pointed out, she was not the first in Oregon to use the law to end her own life early. There had been 700 others over the last 20 years. So this was not a new case. It's just that because she's young and the tragedy of her situation strikes a chord with us, it mm-hmm. resonates with
it
us.
It does.
Because an advocacy group called Compassion and Care, which was formerly called the Hemlock Society, which has a whole different feel to it than Compassion and Care.
Yes, it does.
Which is why they changed it. The focus group tests didn't mm-hmm. test quite as well for Hemlock Society. They took her story and they produced it and stage managed it. And when you see the videos of Brittany Maynard on YouTube, which are still there, you'll see that they've got some very gentle, emotional music in the background playing softly. It's intended to evoke a certain emotional response. And the emotional response is intended to make you, the viewer, ignore the fact that Brittany Maynard's case should be separate from the larger question, which is, should assisted suicide be legal?
Right.
Should it be legal?
Suicide being the operative word.
Right. Wesley J. Smith made an excellent point. He's got a blog at National Review Online called Human Exceptionalism. You really should bookmark it and read it, because Wesley J. Smith is one of the few voices really speaking out for the idea that humans have intrinsic worth simply because we are human. Now, he does not approach this from a religious perspective. I don't know his beliefs, but that's by design. He doesn't want his faith to color the argument.
Right.
He doesn't want opponents to be able to say, "Well, you're just a Bible-bashing Christian," and disregard his arguments that way. He's an attorney.
Bible-thumping.
Yeah, Bible-bashing. Bible-thumping Christian. Wesley is an attorney. He's very intelligent, insightful, and an excellent writer, so you really should read his blog. But he makes a good point. He said the Brittany Maynard case, and he calls it a media explosion, is an intense advocacy offensive, funded substantially by the culturally subversive George Soros through his support of Compassion and Choices, interesting point, mm-hmm. that is intended to do two things. First, drive assisted suicide into implementation by the power of hyper-emotion. Don't think, just feel.
Exactly.
Point number two, to silence those who want to discuss non-lethal approaches to caring for terminally ill patients in the larger context of the issues raised by Maynard's illness. In other words, again, don't think, just feel. Now, in another column, he makes this point. Imagine you have Lou Gehrig's disease, which is a terminal diagnosis. You know you're dying. Imagine how much more difficult your struggle is by advocates who claim that you should commit suicide if you want death with dignity. In other words, you cannot die with dignity unless you kill yourself. And two, society should help you do it because you're a burden on your family and burden on society if you don't do it.
That's the slope that we're going down. That is a very slippery slope. That it goes from I get to choose to someone else chooses for me to hey, you're a burden to boy, you're inconvenient.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we are seeing that. And Europe is already farther along. And I don't have the information in front of me, so I won't try to recall it from memory. But Europe is farther along this slope. But this, I think, was a very significant issue. And this was really the bigger story. And I'm sorry that I spent, you know, so much time trying to, you know, talk about statistics of the election results, because really this was the big story of this past week, not the midterm election.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, you know, it is what it is, and we've come way past the time. Sam has long since
he's left
been
the building.
Staring. And the building is much, much sadder for his loss.
Well, the Quest for Truth virtual conference tonight begins at 6:30 p.m. Central Time, and Central Time is UTC minus 6 now.
Yes, it is. And you are going to be on at 8 o'clock.
Yes.
Or not, 8 o'clock Central, right?
That's correct. And then there will be a last word discussion at
11 o'clock Central? No, 11 o'clock Eastern.
11 Eastern, so 10 o'clock,
Yeah, 10 o'clock Central.
Yeah, following the question and answer session. So I'll be taking some coffee.
And I'll be sleeping. Yeah, I mean, if you want to put the microphone in there and listen to me snore, that's up to you. But I'll be long gone.
Tomorrow morning, the Gilbert House Fellowship resumes. We hope you can join us tomorrow morning, either live or, you know,
in the
on
archives.
Tape.
And we hope that you are understanding of the fact that we have moved away from the video presentation of the fellowship, which was a nice experiment, but honestly, moving to Blog Talk Radio and having the opportunity for a chat room that is easy to get into and easy to for us to turn on, just too many buttons in the other way.
Works well. And we'll begin with the Book of Job tomorrow. And you know, Job, when I remember reading it when I read through the first time I read through the Bible and thought, oh, okay, this is just really boring. These guys are just really complaining and pretty downbeat. But there's a lot of meat in there. There's a lot of stuff in there.
And we're going to talk about that tomorrow. We are, of course, going through the Bible chronologically. So if you're wondering why we suddenly went from Genesis to Job, that is why.
Yeah. So that'll be tomorrow morning, 10:30 a.m. Central Time, here at the same Blog Talk channel, blogtalkradio.com/PID radio. And then Sharon's presentation for the Quest for Truth virtual conference, 3 p.m. Central Time tomorrow.
That's right.
And then, VFTB, interesting interview with Dr. Michael Lake. He's the founder and chancellor of Biblical Life College and Seminary in Marshfield, Missouri, and he's the author of a new book, I think it'll be coming out here in just a couple of weeks, called The Shinar Directive.
Mm-hmm. It looks really interesting, and he's a very nice man. And he doesn't live too far from Crane, so we were able to meet him in person while we were there.
Yeah, that'll be posted tomorrow night at vftb.net. So until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone.